you don't know what she's talking about, then it's time for Faith Finds Out. Ooh, you don't know, but you're gonna find out.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Faith Finds Out. This is your host, Faith Signs. So we are back talking about the Enneagram today, guys. And if you don't follow the podcast on Instagram, first of all, what's wrong with you? But secondly, you will have missed what I announced on, I think, Friday in my stories, which is that I'm definitely going to have to break the Enneagram up into three total episodes. So last week, obviously, was part one. I wanted to be able to finish up this week, and I just very quickly learned that that's just not going to be realistic. So I'm learning. But today we are going to talk about types 4, 5, and 6. Obviously, if you joined us last week, if you didn't hear last week's episode, first of all, please stop and go listen to that, because we laid all the groundwork. We talked about all the basics of, you know, what the Enneagram is and its origins and all of that good stuff. And then kind of talked about how we are going to go into each type and kind of what the description looks like. And I defined some terms and things like that. So we learned about wings and we learned about disintegration and integration, and it's all good stuff. So go listen to that if you haven't already. But we did go over that and then types 1, 2, and 3 last week. So this week we're just going to talk about types 4, 5, and 6, and we'll come back next week and wrap up with hearing about parts 7, 8, and 9. I think that makes the most sense. I don't want to have this be unreasonably long. It's been really tricky for me because I've been trying to make the episode lengths relatively consistent, and that's really hard for me to do because when I get excited about stuff, I tend to rant and just go on and on and on about it, which you'll learn is a 5 thing. But anyway, that's okay. You know, I'm learning and it's whatever, but we're going to keep talking about this. And I think that's good because I actually got a lot of interesting and really positive feedback from you guys about last week's episode. I knew that the Enneagram was relatively trendy, but I didn't know. There's actually so many people that I talked to that hadn't heard about it before, or had heard about it in passing but didn't really know what it was about. And so they learned a lot last week, which is so fun. That makes me feel so happy. That's what I want, is for you guys to be learning. So that was really exciting, and I'm excited to keep talking this week and also next week. So that's where we're at, guys. We're gonna talk about numbers 4, 5, and 6. That is really exciting. Number 4 is the last of the feelings center, and then we are diving into the thinking center. So that'll be good times. But first of all, I just wanted to say I hope you guys had a great week. I had an okay week. I had a good week in my life. Obviously, you know, the events of this past week have just been really draining on not, I'm sure, like, least of all me, but on a lot of people. I am, of course, talking about Jacob Blake, who was a young man who was shot in the back 7 times by a quote-unquote police officer. I call that a hitman, but I guess, you know, tomato, tomato. Yeah, I don't even know how to talk about it, and I can promise you this, we're gonna get into Black history very soon, because one of my main goals in starting this podcast was to actually teach people the reality of, you know, what this country has been and what the relationship between America and its Black community has been and is currently, and get a much clearer view of that, because, you know, I touched on this in episode 1, but there's so much stuff that we didn't learn, which is a crime. And, you know, so that's something I want to get into. So, you know, obviously not going to talk about that today, but, you know, that's made this week kind of hard for me. I am just upset. I'm upset. And I know Black people in this country are tired, like really tired. You know, this has been really stressful and straining on all of us. And when I say this, I mean just everything that's happened this year, COVID on top of the Black Lives Matter movement and the resurgence there. That is great, but really not great that it's even necessary. Everything on top of everything is just so overwhelming. And this idea that we don't know how else to get the point across that change has to happen, that's what's been really hard for me as someone who is ever logical to a fault, to not I can't wrap my head around what people aren't seeing or aren't understanding, or how people can blind themselves so intentionally to the things that are happening. It's been really heavy on me, and I know, I mean, I'm not in the Black community, right? And so I can't even imagine, because this is a fight that I realistically, really officially entered this year, honestly, and something that the Black community has been fighting, whether they like it or not, their entire lives, and they can't take a break from fighting it like I could if I wanted to. So I say that I'm drained, but I definitely don't want to say that in a way that sounds like I'm complaining, because I have no place to. This is a fight I've decided to take up, and that is my responsibility, and I don't get to take a break. I don't, because the Black community never gets to. So anyway, I didn't mean to bring down the podcast right at the beginning, but I want to talk about what's really happening in the world. And this week rocked me, man. I'll say it. It really did. I'm so scared to see what the numbers are going to look like on COVID when people start going back to school. I'm frustrated and upset there are people that are forced to go back to school already. It's just a lot. It's just a lot, and it's really wearing on me. So, you know, that's what it is. That's reality, but still we fight. And I encourage you, if you haven't been, and I'm not judging you, it's hard and it's a lot, and, you know, everyone has different lives, so I'm I don't mean to call you out, but if you aren't someone that has been learning about, you know, the history of Black people in this country, and, you know, seeking on your own whether or not you believe that there's systemic racism, and what you could possibly do, and how you're supposed to, what your place is, and all of this, if you're someone who hasn't really gone there yet, I would encourage you to. I really would. It's important just to always be self-aware. And, you know, I am the millionth person to say this to you, I'm sure, but your vote is really very, very, very important. It's very important. And, you know, I don't want to sit here and list all of the voting dates in every state. And I know I have listeners all over the place. So, but I will say, look up what's going on in your area. Make sure you know where you're supposed to be voting. Take a look at your ballot, not just the presidential election, but, you know, everything else you're going to see on it as well. All of those positions are very, very important. They all affect our day-to-day lives in a very real way. So, you know, try to bring yourself up to speed on every name on the ballot. Just, there's great, great resources and websites that give you awesome, like, very condensed overviews of what people are for and against and different things like that. So, you know, definitely look into that information for your respective area and make sure that you're aware, because this is like the most important election of our lifetime so far, millennials. And I really believe that. I'll probably say that every time, but you know, this is a big one. There is a gigantic orange man running our country, and it's a very scary thing. So that's all the political talk we're going to have for this episode today. I just want to be real about what's happening in my life, and this has taken a lot of my focus this week, plain and simple. So again, I didn't mean to bring the mood down, guys, but it's important that we're talking about it because it's happening. Jacob Blake was shot in the back as he was trying to walk away from a situation, and he was shot 7 times by a police officer who has still not been arrested. He's a criminal, okay? That he is a criminal, and he attempted murder, and it's not acceptable. And that's that. So talking about our fun fact here, we're gonna pick this mood up just a little bit. So I actually thought that this fun fact was so hilarious. So armadillos, which by the way are the state animal for Texas, so it is the official animal of the state of Texas. Armadillos' shells are bulletproof, which I think is insane. In fact, there was one Texas man who sucks, who was hospitalized because he shot a bullet at an armadillo, which is why he sucks. Like, why are you trying to shoot armadillos? They're adorable, and they're not hurting you, and why in the world would you try to shoot one? Super glad you were hospitalized. Actually, that's, don't sue me. I hope you're doing well, sir. But anyway, he was hospitalized because he tried to shoot an armadillo, and the bullet ricocheted off the animal and hit him in the jaw. So he actually shot himself in the jaw, because armadillo shells are bulletproof, and I think that's rad. And I always giggle, I'll say, this is a little personal anecdote, but I always giggle when I see armadillos or talk about them, because my dad has this super random armadillo tattoo on his arm, which I always really liked when I was a little kid, because I think armadillos are cute, and it was funny that it's like literally on the top of his forearm. It's on his forearm. And so anyway, the story behind it, as I know, and Dad, correct me if I'm wrong, but as I know it, the story is that he was like out partying with his brothers when he was in his early 20s. So, you know, basically a kid, right? And he got super drunk and woke up the next day and had an armadillo tattoo on his arm. And apparently, maybe it was like, that's all the cash he had for just armadillo. Oh, that's what I think. I think he said that the original picture in the tattoo place was like an armadillo and like tree, some kind of a tree next to it. And it was like this whole picture. And he could only afford the armadillo. I love the idea of our parents being like 21 and just complete morons like we were. I really love that. Life is funny. So anyway, armadillos always make me giggle because my dad's armadillo tattoo and the drunken story behind it. Pobody's nerfed, guys. All right. Everyone has regrets from drinking too much. And if you don't, congratulations. Good for you. Like, way to make good choices. But also, I can't relate. I absolutely cannot relate to you. Okay. So that was our fun fact. I know I did another animal fun fact, but animals are fun and facts about them are super fascinating, but I'll not do an animal one next week, I promise. But I just thought that one was really cool. So armadillos are bulletproof, so don't be dicks and try to shoot them because you'll hurt yourself. A little PSA for everyone. I'm out here keeping people safe. So we are not going to take up any more time. I'm going to take a quick break and then we will hop back into the Enneagram. All right, guys, let's hop right into talking about Enneagram Type 4s. I love the 4s. I know I've said that every time, and I will say that every time. Am I just trying to be fair? Yes. Do I mean it still? Yes. Both of those things are true. Get over it. So, Type 4s are known as the individualists. Type 4s are sensitive, introspective, expressive, dramatic. They can be self-absorbed and even temperamental. Again, obviously, we're wrapping up the feelings center, so 4s are very much in the feeling center, constantly up in their feelings, the 4s. So they're very self-aware and very sensitive and can be reserved. They're emotionally very honest, creative, and personal. They can be moody and self-conscious and sometimes withholding of themselves because of their self-consciousness. Consciousness? I think I crushed that. Anyway, that word is so hard. They can feel kind of like disdainful of the ordinary, right? Like they want to be exempt from ordinary ways of living. They live to stand out. They are, you know, they're the individualists, right? They typically have problems with melancholy, self-indulgence, and self-pity. They, again, can get up in their feelings and just set up camp there and live there for quite a long time. You know, kind of can, if not careful, fall into a little bit of like a woe is me sort of attitude. But at their best, they are inspired, they're highly creative, they're able to renew themselves and transform their experiences. So the Type 4's basic fear is that they have no identity or personal significance. They want to stand out. They don't want to be like other people around them. They want to feel like they are one of a kind. Their basic desire is to find themselves and their significance. So they want to create an identity that they feel proud of. Type 4s, obviously the wings for a Type 4 would be a 3, which is again in the feeling center, or a Type 5, which is in the thinking center. So I will say really quick, I don't want to get too confusing, but I've read a lot because I am a 4 with, I'm a five with a four wing. I've read a lot about the kind of connection between fives and fours, and that jump over from thinking, from feeling to thinking, or thinking to feeling, like fives with four wings and four with five wings can really, when healthy, be really powerful people to be able to tap in significantly to both of those things and really balance that well. So I would say, probably from my opinion, that a four with a wing five is, well, it definitely is one of the rarest types, because fours are the rarest type. They want to be individuals, and they are. They are one of the rarest types. They are the rarest type. And so I would think even more rare than that would be a four with a wing five, because again, they're having to internally bridge that feeling and thinking. So really, really interesting. But yeah, so three and fives are their wings. Their key motivations are to express themselves and their individuality, to create and surround themselves with beauty, to maintain certain moods and feelings. They can withdraw to protect their self-image or to take care of emotional needs before attending to anything else. And they want to attract a rescuer, quote unquote. So very interesting thing there. But they're definitely the hopeless romantics of all the types. I'll say that for sure. So, you know, when unhealthy, when stressed, when, you know, moving in disintegration, aloof fours suddenly become over-involved and quite clingy, like a two can be. And when moving in a really healthy direction, when they're really growing and changing, when they're integrating, envious, emotionally turbulent fours become more objective and principled, like healthy ones. So some great examples of fours. Again, we're going to see a lot of the feelings-centered people, so a lot of really great writers and artists, and a lot of other people as well. So Jackie Kennedy, Jackie O, Edgar Allan Poe, Virginia Woolf, Anne Frank, Tennessee Williams, J.D. Salinger, Anne Rice, Frida Kahlo, Hank Williams, Billie Holiday, Judy Garland, Miles Davis, Joni Mitchell, Bob Dylan, Paul Simon. Again, these people are one of a kind. Like, there is not another Cat Stevens. He's a four. There is not another Cher. Name another Cher for me, I dare you. A Prince. Hello. Prince is the epitome of one of a kind. Like, nobody is like Prince. People have tried to have eras that are similar to Prince. I'm talking about you, Justin Timberlake, but no one is Prince. No one's Prince. Stevie Nicks. Oh, wait, let's pause. This has nothing to do with anything, and I'm really sorry. It's very self-indulgent of me, but I'm so obsessed with Stevie Nicks. You guys, Fleetwood Mac, their Rumours album, I mean, like, look, I'm preaching to the choir, I'm sure, because it's, like, one of the most famous albums in history, but top three favorite albums of all time, and that's really saying something, has to be Rumours by Fleetwood Mac. It is, oh my gosh, I listen to it, I swear I listen to it probably once a week, I'm not even kidding. Anyway, Stevie Nicks is a four, and she's rad, and I love you, Stevie, I love you. Sarah McLachlan is a four, Alanis Morissette, Amy Winehouse was a four, let's see, Angelina Jolie, Winona Ryder, Nicolas Cage, Johnny Depp. And then in terms of some fictional characters, you know how much I love using fictional characters, our girl Anne Shirley from Anne of Green Gables. Oh, Spike from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Oh, Loki. Sorry, my notes are a little scribbled here. Sometimes I write them, sometimes I type them. It's tricky. Anyway, Loki from Thor is such a four. And he's a really good example of one. Go back and watch actually the first Thor, and that's when you really see a lot of that. Obviously, that's when he was like the villain. I almost said enemy, which wouldn't have sounded quite right. So the type four is named the individualist because fours maintain their identity by seeing themselves as fundamentally different from other people. Fours feel that they are unlike other human beings, and consequently, that no one can understand them or love them exactly right. They often see themselves as uniquely talented, possessing special one-of-a-kind gifts, and they're often right about that, right? Like, we talked about all of the different people, like Prince and Cher and all of that. I mean, you know, they're not wrong, right? Like, they absolutely are unique. But also that means that they are uniquely flawed and disadvantaged, and fours really tend to focus in on that as well. So more than any other type, fours are actually very aware of and focused on their self-identified deficiencies. bullies. They can be very self-conscious because they see their faults more clearly than really anybody else sees them, and they want to fix it more than you do. And so, you know, they're constant seekers. They're real lifelong seekers, the fours, which I think personally is an awesome quality. Very, very good quality in a person. So healthy fours are honest with themselves. They own all of their feelings, and they can look at their motives and their contradictions and emotional conflicts without really denying or whitewashing them, which again is a really strong quality. To be just genuinely honest with yourself and very self-aware is a great thing. So they may not necessarily like what they discover, but they're constantly discovering themselves more and more. So they don't try to rationalize their states. They don't try to hide themselves from other people. They're not afraid to see themselves warts and all, and for other people to see them that way too. Healthy fours are willing to reveal highly personal and potentially shameful things about themselves because they're determined to understand the truth of their experience. They want to discover who they are and come to terms with their emotional history. This ability also enables fours to endure suffering with a quiet strength. Their familiarity with their own darker nature makes it easier for them to process painful experiences that might be overwhelming to other types. Nevertheless, fours often report that they feel that they're missing something in themselves. They might have difficulty identifying exactly what that something is, but, you know, they do feel like they see other people living in abundance of this thing that they feel they're lacking. So again, they feel uniquely disadvantaged, like no one knows what they're going through quite like they themselves do. So, you know, given time and sufficient perspective, fours can recognize that they're unsure about aspects of their own self-image and personality. And, you know, they feel that their lack of clear and stable identity, particularly a social persona that they are comfortable with. So again, they're trying to create this ideal identity and, you know, just constantly feeling like they're falling short of that. While it's true that fours often feel different from others, they don't really want to be alone, right? They are still very relational people. They feel potentially socially awkward, maybe, or self-conscious, but they deeply want to connect with people, and they really want to find those few people in the world that truly understand them and their feelings. Like I said, they're the romantics of all the Enneagram types. So they long for that one person that can come into their lives and appreciate, like, their secret selves, right? That they don't show the whole world and that the world would never understand. They want to find that one person that understands them, which, don't we all, girlfriend? But such validation, you know, often remains out of reach because life. And fours begin to build their identities around how unlike everyone else they are. They are the outsider, and that's how they tend to look at themselves. So, you know, what comforts other people wouldn't comfort them, and they constantly feel like no one knows exactly how to relate to them the way that they need. They can have problems, like I said, with chronically low self-esteem. They definitely attempt to compensate for this by cultivating a kind of fantasy self, or like an idealized self-image that's built up primarily of their imagination. In the course of their lives, fours may try several identities on for size, basing themselves and their styles and preferences and qualities on things that they find attractive in other people, but underneath the surface, they still feel really uncertain about who they are truly, and they're always going to be seeking for that. So the problem is that they base their identities largely on their feelings, and, you know, as we all know, feelings change, right? So when fours look inward, they see a kind of kaleidoscope or like ever-shifting pattern of emotional reactions. One of the biggest challenges fours can face is really letting go of feelings from the past, right? They tend to kind of nurse a wound and hold on to a negative feeling longer than they need to. Again, it's kind of their tendency to move in sort of a pity party direction when they feel that they've been really hurt or that they've really gone through something really major, right? So again, like, being in your feelings after you go through something and really allowing yourself to lean into those feelings and recognize them and appreciate them and acknowledge them is an awesome thing. It's an awesome thing, but there's also a balance, right? Like, you can't stay there for 5 years. I mean, you can, but that sounds miserable. So that kind of balance of when enough is enough, kind of, is what fours can have a lifelong struggle with. So let's talk about the childhood wound for a four, and that is rejection of identity. So as children, fours felt disconnected from both or any of the parental figures in their lives. So this could have been for extreme reasons or very mild reasons that maybe only they themselves recognized. You know, some fours were maybe abused by their parents, while others just felt like their parents didn't really see them for who they were or who they really wanted to be. In many cases, fours felt like their parents' advice and comfort was generic to all of their kids, maybe, and you know, was meant for another child and really couldn't apply to them because they're different. You know, fours feel so out of place within their own families a lot of times as children. So, you know, they try early on to accept what makes them different. They notice it, they evaluate it, and as a coping mechanism, they really lean into it, right? They really lean into those feelings of rejection and isolation and, you know, parents just don't understand us and, you know, that kind of thing. So through developing this coping mechanism, they often set themselves on a trajectory of feeling unusual, different, out of touch with quote-unquote ordinary people. So more than most things, fours want to find their identity because they believe that this will take away the feelings of melancholy and loneliness that they've plagued themselves with their entire lives. A lot of fours are daydreamers. They daydream about the possibility of meeting someone who will finally see them for who they are. We talked about that. They feel so disconnected from their families growing up that they hope to connect with a friend or a romantic partner. So, you know, I always think about, when I think about, like, childhood wounding of a four, I always think about, for us millennials, you'll know, like, the emo phase we all went through. I mean, I don't want to say we all, it was really big, and I leaned into it hard when I was in middle school, guys. I was so emo. Oh, guys, I stole so much stuff from Hot Topic. I'm sorry, Mom and Dad. Statute of limitations, I'm good, but I stole a lot. I had the, like, studded belt and the, like, chunky black bracelets, and I put on, like, way too much eyeliner, and I always wore this big black sweatshirt, and I was like, no one understands me, which is, like, such an adolescent thing, but think about a four as a child. They, as a coping mechanism for feeling self-conscious about how unique they are, they tend to walk around with a lot of, like, self-created pride. Like, they almost fake pride in their differences. So they walk around like, ha, I'm not like you or anyone else. But really, they're self-conscious about the fact that they're not like anyone else. So basic teenager stuff, but it is like that whole emo scene and the kind of idea behind it of, like, we're so different and, oh, like, you know, whatever, Blink-182, all that. I always think of that when I think of four childhood wounding. I just wanted to say that. And sorry for everyone in my family who just learned that I stole from Hot Topic. And I'm sorry for all of you who just learned that I used to like stuff at Hot Topic. We all went through it, okay? We were all kids and did really embarrassing things. But let's move on. Okay, so let's talk about number five. Obviously, I'm a five. I think I've said that about a million times. So, type fives are known as the investigators. Fives are intense and cerebral, perceptive, innovative, secretive, and isolated. Fives are alert, they are curious, deeply curious. They are able to concentrate and focus on developing complex ideas and skills. So they can really put their heads down and get through a lot without distraction. So they are independent. They are innovative and inventive. They can be really preoccupied with their thoughts and their imaginary constructs. Fives have deep, intricate worlds in their minds. Like, our thought life is deep, and it is a whole other world that we live in. And I know that sounds crazy, and I don't know how else to explain it, but it really is true. I can sit down, you guys. I can, like, literally make some coffee and sit down on my couch on a Saturday morning and just sit in silence and think for, like, an hour and a half and feel like I have very much used that time wisely. Like, I feel like that was a worthwhile thing to do, and I did not get bored, and I really enjoyed it. And that's something that a lot of other types can't really wrap their heads around, just like, you know, caring about other people. isn't something I can wrap my head around. That's not true. Fives are nice, okay? Fives are nice. We just don't know how to show it. That's what I mean when I say we're so different from twos. Like, twos are so lovely. And I'm lovely inside. I don't know. I don't really have time to be lovely to you because I'm thinking about stuff. You know what I mean? Anyway, the basic fear, it's going to be hard for me to talk about fives because it's too personal to me, but I'm going to do my best. The five's basic fear is being useless or incapable or seen as incompetent, really. Their basic desire is to be capable and competent. Obviously, their wings are four, which we talked about, the bridge between thinking and feeling and how tricky that can be. So five wing fours, me, are pretty much superheroes. It's fine. I don't want to talk about it. Or the six. And so, you know, their key motivations are to possess knowledge, to understand the environment, to have everything figured out as a way of defending themselves from threats from the environment. So we want knowledge. Knowledge on top of knowledge on top of knowledge. I want to know everything about my surroundings. I want to know everything about what makes the world work, about what makes people work. I want to know everything so I'm never caught off guard. That's what it really is. So when fives are really healthy, or I'm sorry, really unhealthy, again, that's a generalization, but when they're in stress or distress, when they're moving in the direction of disintegration, detached fives suddenly become hyperactive and scattered like sevens. But when they're moving in a healthier direction, when they're integrating, when they're growing and really self-aware, detached fives become more self-confident and decisive like a healthy eight. If a five can learn to be decisive, guys, we are unstoppable. But that is a lifelong challenge to decide that the research part of a project is done and the action time has arrived is the biggest, scariest challenge that we sometimes can face in our whole lives. Is like with me starting this podcast, I wanted to start a podcast like 3 years ago, guys, and I genuinely sought out to do it, and I spent so much time thinking I had to consume every podcast in existence and learn everything about podcasting and become an editing master and to like all of these things. I had to master this before I even tried. And so I was like, well, I want to do this, but I'll never be able to, you know. And that might sound ridiculous to some of you who are very different from fives. Like, why wouldn't you just do it? Or like a three, like I said, with my friend Lizzie, I was like, why don't you just sit down? Like, she's probably thinking like, just do it already, you know? And it's just, it's hard to decide the knowledge gathering part is done because that's our comfortable place to live. So that is a really great thing when we can, in a really healthy time in our lives, become confident and decisive like eights is really great. So some examples of fives are Albert Einstein, John Nash from A Beautiful Mind, Stephen Hawking, Vincent Van Gogh, let's see, Salvador Dali, Emily Dickinson, Agatha Christie, James Joyce, Stephen King. Stephen King is such a five. And P.S., if you guys haven't read his book, Stephen King on Writing, it's kind of like half autobiography and then half just a book on writing, but it is incredible and insightful, and you don't even have to care about writing. It's just wisdom, and it's so cool. And if you like Stephen King at all and you want to get inside his mind, it is a really good, just like I said, you know, that Taylor Swift documentary on Netflix was a really good example of the mind of a three. I feel like reading Stephen King's book on writing is a really, really cool look inside the mind of a five. So little tip if you're interested. Bill Gates is a five, Mark Zuckerberg, Jane Goodall, you know, again, just the really smart people in the world, you know? We're just pretty smart people. I don't fit on this list, I'll tell you that. Did not go to college. Let's see. Alfred Hitchcock, Tim Burton, David Lynch, David Fincher, Jodie Foster. In terms of some really interesting fictional characters, and we talked about John Nash, but some really interesting fictional characters that are fives, definitely Severus Snape was a five, absolutely. Albus Dumbledore was a five. Arthur Weasley was a five. I know that those are all Harry Potter characters, but what else do I need to say? Oh, also, you know, listen, I gotta be honest. So I said cool people, and now I gotta say Hannibal Lecter was a five. I really just made you guys think things about a five by saying that, but it's true. So, you know, the fives are called the investigators because more than any other type, fives want to find out why things are the way they are. They want to understand the why behind everything that they do, everything they know, everything they see. They want to understand how the world works, whether it's in the cosmos, the microscopic world, the animal, vegetable, mineral kingdoms, the inner world of their imaginations, which, like I said before, is deeply rich. They're always searching, asking questions, millions of questions, delving into things in depth. They don't accept received opinions and doctrines, right? Like, so when someone says, this is what you are to believe, they are like, well, we'll see about that. And they go do some very intense Googling about it. feeling a strong need to test the truth, like I said, or most assumptions for themselves. They don't really trust other people's research. They want to go do it themselves. So behind a five's relentless pursuit of knowledge is really a deep insecurity about their ability to function successfully in the world. Fives feel that they don't have the ability to do things as well as others, but rather than engage directly with activities that they might that might bolster their confidence, fives tend to take a step back into their minds where they feel more capable and comfortable. Their belief is that from the safety of their minds, they'll eventually figure out how to do things and one day rejoin the world. So that's like what I said about the podcast. We kind of like to observe from the sidelines, and then we think to ourselves and we tell ourselves, well, eventually once I've mastered this, I'll be able to join everyone and do it, and I won't embarrass myself because I'll know everything about it. But, you know, some things, that day would never come. Like, you can never master a subject entirely in some cases, right? So it's hard for us to then find out where the stopping point is and decide, like, we've learned enough and rejoin the world, but we keep telling ourselves we'll get there eventually, and that can really stop us from living and really having fulfilling life experiences because we're too nervous to step out and we don't feel that we've gotten to a point where we can yet. So fives spend a lot of their times observing and contemplating, like I said, and, you know, they immerse themselves into observations and begin to internalize their knowledge and use it to gain self-confidence. So the more they know, the more confident they feel. They may stumble across exciting new information and make new creative combinations. You know, so again, it is a plus, right? Like, we need deep thinkers, but there's just always, you know, to what end, right? Knowledge, understanding, and insight are highly valued by fives because their identity is built around having ideas, being someone who has something unusual and insightful to say. So fives are not interested in exploring what is already familiar and well-established. Rather, their attention is drawn to the unusual, the overlooked, the secret, the occult, the bizarre, the fantastic, the unthinkable, investigating unknown territory, knowing something that others do not know, creating something that no one has ever experienced allows vibes to have a niche for themselves that no one else occupies. And that's a very comfortable feeling for a five. Fives also are major energy hoarders. And I don't really know how to explain that other than just, like, share my experience. I am the kind of person who, if I am stressed over, like, something that's happening at work, and I want to say, as I say this out loud, I know it doesn't make sense, but I feel it, so I'm just sharing it with you. Like, if I have a big stress at work, let's say work is not going well for whatever reason, there's a big project that I don't feel like is being successful or whatever, work is hard, right? I will get off work at like 6:30 or whatever every day, and say my sister calls me and says like, hey, do you want to meet up for dinner around 8? I'm free, and I can do that. But for some reason, I convince myself I have to conserve my energy. I have to conserve my energy because tomorrow I gotta go back to work and this thing is happening. So I shouldn't go to dinner tonight. And instead of going to dinner, all I do is like sit and watch TV, but somehow I feel that I'm conserving my energy by not going out and hanging out with people who I love and want to hang out with because I don't feel like I have the capacity to do that because, you know, work is weird right now. And that doesn't really make sense. And it does keep me from a lot of fun things. And it does make me kind of a crappy friend sometimes because as much as I try and challenge myself not to do this, and I definitely have gotten better about this as I've gotten older, but I still can be the kind of person who agrees to something when I'm in a certain mood. And this to a certain extent is just all introverts, right? But I'll agree to something. And then when the time comes to do it, I'm like, oh, I absolutely can't do that. There's no way in the world. It's physically impossible for me to go to happy hour with the girls right now because I'm so stressed over this one thing, or I need to keep figuring this part of my life out. And even if I don't do anything related to that, instead of going with them, I still feel like I can't go with them. It's very weird, but we conserve our energy. We are hoarders of our time and our energy. Those are resources that we are not very generous with. So we do tend to, in the midst of mastering something, we tend to just go into like hibernation, and we can really isolate ourselves from other people because we're in the midst of working through something, processing something, figuring something out. So it's important, if you have five friends in your life, check on us, right? Like, maybe don't push us, but check in. Really, really check in with me and make me answer you, you know? And you know, again, we try, but it's just, it can be a challenge for us. We get really caught up and consumed by things that we are focused on. So, and we're also known to have trouble engaging sometimes socially when we're in the middle of one of those kind of obsessive knowledge binging type of places. So I don't have much to say. If I'm really passionate about learning about, you know, armadillos, I might not have much to say when you're talking about football. Well, that's a terrible example. I love football and I always have a lot to say. But let's say, for example, that I'm a typical what people think women are and that we don't like sports, which is, by the way, not true. Anyway, don't need to get feminist right now. But so let's say you're talking about football and I'm just totally checked out. Like, this doesn't interest me. But somebody just trying to be polite in the group says, like, Faith, I know you've been reading a lot about armadillos. How's that going? Well, you shouldn't ask me that unless you have the rest of your evening to devote to listening to me talk about armadillos, because it's all I'm thinking about and I've got a lot to say. And because I specifically am also autistic, I have a hard time understanding that people are not enjoying what I'm saying and have lost interest in the conversation quite a long time ago. But it is really true. We love knowing more than other people about a topic and being able to talk about it. So basically, we're really great people who are not at all annoying. So that's a five. Let's talk about childhood wounds. I feel like I talked about that one more than others, and if I did that, I'm sorry. How self-indulgent. So the childhood wound for a five, did I say threes before? Doesn't matter. The childhood wound for a five is rejection of intimacy. You know, in childhood, fives felt ambivalent towards their parental figures. They were never quite sure of where their place was or where they belonged. Essentially, they felt like odd ducks, right? So forever on the outside looking in, rather than nurtured and accepted as one of the group. They felt very out of place within their families. So sometimes there were obvious reasons for this. So, you know, parents maybe were abusive or alcoholics, or maybe they very openly played favorites. And in other situations, it could just be that they didn't feel understood, and maybe really nobody realistically contributed to that, but they just felt that way, right? They picked up on clues that were made, or that made them feel a particular way, even if their parents didn't intend for it to be that way. But whatever the case, fives felt like there was little they could do to be wanted or needed by their family, which is sad to feel for a kid. To cope with the feelings of quote-unquote otherness, fives retreated from the outside world and from their families and often hid away in their rooms. I definitely used to read for hours on end with a flashlight and a book in my closet. Literally, I would just read it in my closet with the door closed for a very long time, into the night. My parents didn't know I was awake in the middle of the night, but I was, and I was reading. Anyway, so they often hid away in their rooms looking for a subject that they could master or an area of expertise that would allow them to find their place in their families or in society. This area of expertise needed to be something unique to them. So, you know, for example, if all of their siblings were playing the piano, they would want to learn the accordion. This sort of unspoken message from fives is like, don't ask too much of me, and I won't ask too much of you. They resent intrusion. Deeply, deeply, deeply private people. Fives are so, so private. I'm so private. I really am. And a lot of fives are more private than me. Like, this podcast is a very, very vulnerable thing. I mean, I talked about my ex-boyfriend last week, who, by the way, update, did not say anything to me, which means he's probably not listening to this, which is probably for the best, but honestly, too bad for him that he didn't learn why otters hold hands, am I right? Like, he'll never know that because he doesn't listen to this podcast, and that's really too bad for him. But anyway, we're in the clear. I didn't get in trouble, guys. No one tried to sue me, so anyway, this is a vulnerable difficult thing for me to do because I am a really private person, and fives can feel very easily, they can very easily feel intruded upon, even if that isn't your intention. Like, you know, if like a mom comes into the room of her type five teenage daughter and just says like, how have things been going with your friend so-and-so? She hasn't been around in a while. We all know that's just a mom being a mom and being a kind one who cares about her child, right? But a five might view that as such an intrusion. Like, how dare you ask about my personal relationship with so-and-so? And, like, it just comes across that way to us sometimes. But again, you know, realistically, that wasn't the intention of the mother, right? So that's the five. I'll stop talking now. I know I said a lot, but, you know, I mean, it's me. What did you expect? I'm very selfish. So let's jump into our last type for this week, which is the type six. The type six is known as the loyalist. Enneagram type sixes, Yeah, I think so. Are committed. They are security-oriented, engaging, responsible, very anxious, and often suspicious. They're very hardworking and reliable and deeply trustworthy. They are excellent troubleshooters. They're really, really great problem solvers. They foresee problems and they foster cooperation. But they can also be very defensive and evasive and very, very anxious. So, you know, they run on stress while complaining about having to run on stress. That's kind of a typical thing for a six sometimes. They can be really cautious and because of that indecisive, but also kind of reactive and defiant and rebellious of authority sometimes. They typically have problems with self-doubt and suspicion. They have really, like I said, they're really great problem solvers, and they have really good instincts, but something inside a six, you know, oftentimes doesn't allow them to trust their own decision-making, their own gut, their own selves. And if they could trust themselves, they'd be totally unstoppable. Sixes are great, but they have this deep-seated self-doubt, so they need to bring all of their people in on their decision-making, because they don't feel confident enough making a big decision without other people's input. So the basic fear of a six is being without support and guidance, and the basic desire is to have security and support. You know, obviously we're in the thinking center now, and they're the center of the thinking center, so on either side of them is the five and the seven, both thinkers. You know, their key motivation is they want to have security, they want to feel supported by others, they want to have certitude and reassurance. They test the attitudes of others towards them. I had a person in my life who was a six who used to intentionally leave the seat up in the bathroom after he was in there to see how I would react to it. Very literally testing people. And I don't say that in a bad way. I mean, it's kind of funny. But they want to constantly test to see what other people's motivations are and if they can trust other people. And they're just kind of running experiments, right, internally. So when in a relatively unhealthy place, in stress or distress, when moving into disintegration, dutiful sixes suddenly become competitive and arrogant, like threes can be. But when they're in a more healthy space, when they're moving in the direction of integration and they're growing, the fearful, pessimistic six can become more relaxed and optimistic, like a healthy nine. Some great examples of sixes are Sigmund Freud, J. Edgar Hoover, Richard Nixon, Mark Twain, Robert F. Kennedy, Malcolm X, George W. Bush. I said W. George W. Bush. I'm such a Texan. George W. Bush, Princess Diana, Prince Harry, J.R.R. Tolkien, Mike Tyson, Bruce Springsteen, Bono from U2 is a six, Melissa Etheridge, Eminem, Mark Wahlberg, Dustin Hoffman, Woody Allen, Diane Keaton, Mel Gibson. Some really great examples of sixes in, like, fictional sixes. Oh, my favorite one would be George Costanza from Seinfeld. So he's such a six. And the show played into that, right? Obviously, like I said, fictional characters are caricatures of the type, but he was always very anxious. He felt like there was trouble around every corner. And again, because it was a sitcom, there was. He always, the worst always happened to George, right? I will admit, I never really got into Seinfeld before. I am so obsessed with sitcoms. I love sitcoms, but I don't know. I mean, it was ahead of my time a little bit, and I never went back and got into it. I grew up on Friends, but it's on Hulu, and I've been rewatching them, and I'm very deep in Seinfeld right now. So George Costanza is an awesome example of a six. He can be very anxious. He thinks that everything is about to crumble around him, but he loves his people, and he is constantly seeking advice from his friends and kind of unsure of his own choices. So the type 6 is named the loyalist because of all the personality types, 6s are the most loyal to their friends and to their beliefs. They will quote unquote go down with the ship. Absolutely. They hang on to relationships a lot of times, a lot longer than other types would have held on. If a relationship is not healthy or not working, it's really hard for a 6 to sort of say uncle, I guess, so to speak. So they're deeply loyal, you know, which is, again, it's a wonderful thing that can be damaging, but it's a lovely thing how loyal 6s can be. 6s are loyal also, though, to ideas, systems, and beliefs, even if that belief is that other beliefs or authorities should be questioned or defied. So even if that belief is total anarchy, they get very, very attached and loyal, and they are in the fight, right? They don't go along with the status quo. You know, their beliefs may be very rebellious and anti-authoritarian, even revolutionary. But in any case, they will typically fight for their beliefs more fiercely than other types and more fiercely than they'd fight for themselves. And they will defend their community, their family, their people more tenaciously than they would ever defend themselves, which again is a really beautiful quality. The reason that 6s are so loyal to others is that they don't want to be abandoned or left without support. That's their basic fear. So the central issue for a type 6 is a failure to have self-confidence, right? 6s come to believe that they don't possess the internal resources to handle life's challenges, even though they absolutely do, and sometimes more than other people. They rely on structures, allies, beliefs, as outside support because they, and sort of guidance, because they don't feel confident in the resources they have within themselves. So if suitable structures don't exist, they will help create and maintain them. So 6s are the primary type in the thinking center. Like I said, they're right smack dab in the middle of the thinking center, meaning that they have the most trouble contacting their inner guidance. They feel the most separated from their gut, their intuition, and their feelings. So as a result, they don't have the confidence in their own judgment, which again, oftentimes is, you know, very much the opposite of the truth, and they have a really good guts and intuitions they're really good judges of character a lot of times, but they just don't trust that that's true about them. So, you know, this doesn't mean that they don't think. They think a lot and they worry a lot. They tend to fear making important decisions, although at the same time, they resist having anyone else make those decisions for them. So, you know, they're the kind of type who would want to ask everyone's opinion, but then ultimately do what they originally set out to do. They want to avoid being controlled, but they're also afraid of taking responsibility in a way that might put them kind of in the line of fire. So it's a little bit of a conflicting feeling within a 6. They're always very aware of their anxieties, and they're always looking for ways to construct a social security. So 6s can be deeply, deeply anxious people, and they are the type that has contingency plans for their contingency plans. They are the type that has a very different, incredibly intricate and complicated password for every single site that they belong to. And they change them every 7 days, just like it's suggested that they do, and they keep their passwords locked up tight, and they have security cameras all around their houses, and they lock it down. They are very secure and very private. They have a lot of anxiety. They always think about the worst case scenario and what could possibly go wrong, which again, in a healthy way, can be great, because it's great to have somebody think through all of those things. It's great to have a 6 on the team, right? Whether it be in work or in a family or anything else, because they are always thinking, well, if we do that, this might happen, so it would be a good idea to do this. And, you know, they're constantly backing up all of their plans, which is really great, but the anxiety, the heavy anxiety that tends to come along with that is, you know, is obviously not great. And the self-doubt that can come along with that as well. So the biggest problems for 6s is that they try to build safety in the environment without resolving their own emotional insecurities. So they learn to face their anxieties, but 6s understand that although the world is always changing, it is by nature uncertain. So they can't know everything. They can't have a contingency plan for everything because we just don't know what's going to happen. So the greatest thing that a 6 can learn is just to have a peace with themselves, despite the uncertainties of life, and to really be okay with how uncertain things can be. So let's talk about the childhood wounding for a typical six. So the sixth child's wounding is rejection of trust. In childhood, sixes felt connected to their protective figures in their home. However, this connection wasn't always positive. They internalized their relationship with this figure and learned to depend on them for a sense of security or guidance rather than trusting their own inner voice. If the figure was unjust or malevolent in some way, the six would internalize their anger and direct it at themselves, becoming self-destructive to an extreme degree. I have seen this happen. If the protective figure violated their trust, they would become distrustful and rebellious of all authority. If the protective figure failed in any way, the sixth child would internalize this failure and respond in kind. Usually this results in sixes feeling ambivalent towards authority. Sixes crave the security of authority and the assurance of a support network, but they also distrust and doubt authorities and others, including themselves. The six abandons their own inner voice in an attempt to gain support from protective figures. They hope that with enough support, they can finally feel secure and become independent. They feel separated from their own internal guidance and can either become agreeable or aggressive in an effort to find their quote-unquote people. They are plagued by a need to find the right course of action, so to speak. They often just don't trust themselves. They usually have an inner committee of authority figures, friends, and various mentors that they have to please before they move forward. So they want to get everyone's input and make sure they're not disagreeing with anyone or anything like that, and that can be really tricky and really stressful. It sounds like a lot for me. I don't care about other people's feelings, so that sounds like a lot. I say, you know, that's a joke. Well, anyway, I'm gonna move on. Don't hate me. So let's see. Their doubt, anxiety, and tendency towards overthinking becomes a burden that they can only get rid of through growth and maturity. So that's kind of the lifelong walk of a six, is learning to feel confident in their own choices and to feel safe and comfortable and let the guard down a little bit, you know? So guys, that was 4, 5, and 6. I'm interested to hear back from you. Please let me know if one of those really stood out to you and you feel like you fit in those categories. I'm thinking of a few people right now that I know in my life that I think are going to be really touched by one of those. So, you know, again, all similar in some ways and all really unique. But yeah, that's kind of where I live right there in the 4, 5, 6. There's a lot that I can connect with in all three of those, but obviously very much a 5 over here. So we're going to wrap up this week, and next week we will pick back up, like I said, and talk about numbers 7, 8, and 9. But because we have this opportunity to have another kind of week go by before we wrap up this topic, I thought it would be fun to kind of throw out there if there's anything else you want to know about these types or a specific type that I haven't answered or talked about for you. Maybe you identify with the 2, but you have a couple questions about it or just about the Enneagram in general, please let me know. You can reach out to me on Instagram at Faith Finds Out Podcast or email me. Always free to do that. It's faithfindsoutpodcast@gmail.com. And send me questions. I would love to answer specific questions. Maybe we'll try to wrap up early next week so that I can do a little bit of Q&A at the end. I would love to do that. It is, I will say, a very vulnerable thing to a brand new podcast to ask for questions to be sent in, because I've got like 50 listeners, so there's probably going to be like 2 questions, and that's embarrassing. So please send your questions. I would love to do a little Q&A if you have any questions about a specific type or something about all of the types that we didn't discuss. If you have any clarifying questions or anything else you want me to touch on, I would love to know. So as always, please feel free to email me and please follow me on Instagram. I posted, you know, some cool kind of quick facts about types 1, 2, and 3, which we talked about last week, that kind of coincide with what we talked about. So I'm going to do the same this week with 4, 5, and 6, and I'll do the same next week as well. There's always a post that relates to every episode and gives some visuals to what we talked about. So I will always encourage you to follow the podcast on Instagram. And it's just fun. We have a lot of fun. So definitely do that. And then guys, if you're enjoying this podcast, first of all, thank you and hi. But I would really love it if you would please share with your friends. And definitely if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, podcasts, definitely rate 5 stars, leave a review. That really, really helps with the algorithm to get this podcast in front of more people. Definitely subscribe and download and all of the things is an awesome, fun way for you guys to show support, and I really, really appreciate it. And yeah, I want to hear from you. I want to know you guys. There are people listening to this, which I think is so cool, but I want to know who you are. So feel free to reach out to me on Instagram or email me. I don't have a Facebook page. I mean, I have a personal Facebook that I'm hardly ever on, but I don't have like a page for the podcast. And I gotta tell you, I'm gonna do my best to not ever have one. If you guys eventually are pushing me to get one, then I'll do it because I love you, but I hate Facebook. I think it sucks. That was lovely. I'm a singer over here. Anyway, I gotta go make some phone calls, get a record deal. But you guys have a great week. And again, guys, I am sorry to an extent that I started off this episode in such a somber tone, but you know, this is, again, it's just something that's weighing really heavy on me, and it has been ever since, you know, end of May when there was this resurgence in the movement. Though I know it's obviously very needed, it's a lot, and it's hard to come to terms as a non-Black person of color myself, or anyone who is probably white and feeling the things that I'm feeling. It's hard to come to terms with the fact that there's so much that I could have been doing that I haven't been doing this whole time. It's a very humbling thing to acknowledge that even though my heart has never, ever been racist towards anyone, I have absolutely contributed to a racist society, and also very unknowingly, you know, sending out microaggressions and things like that. I have been very unintentionally racist in different ways, and I think a lot of us have, and recognizing that and that very humbling season of coming to terms with that and learning how to be better, I mean, that's a lifelong thing, and it's mentally draining and emotionally draining, and it's tiring, and it makes you just want to give up, but we can't, guys. We have a job to do here. So again, vote, please vote. That's number one. And speak up. If you have a platform, if you are on social media, speak up. And whatever it is, whatever it looks like, your support looks different. Everyone's support looks different. So if you're not doing every specific thing, you know, that makes sense. But whether you just want to give of your finances or of your time or whatever, even just as little as educating yourself, tune into this podcast. We're going to start doing Black history lessons pretty soon here. And that will be fun. Not necessarily fun. Well, I think it is going to be really fun, actually. I've been reading about a lot of civil rights leaders that we never learned about in school, and they are dope. So a part of it will be fun, but it is also going to be challenging. I know it's going to be hard to hear, but it's important that we learn. We should have learned it. So anyway, educating yourself can be, you know, helpful as well. So, you know, it's kind of baseline and what we should have always done. And so let's do it. Let's catch up. The Black men and women in our lives, the Black people in our lives, they need our support and they deserve it, and they've always deserved it. And so, you know, let's just do what we can. And again, you know, learn about the ballot in your specific area, learn about the people you're voting for, and really know, make a game plan, make a voting game plan, and, you know, tune in. So just wanted to say that again. I know it's not as fun as me shading my ex-boyfriend, but it's important to talk about. So if you guys have any concerns, comments, questions about anything, you know, again, email me or reach out to me on Instagram, and we'll be back next week. Can't wait to hear from you guys. Have a really awesome week. Again, wear your masks and be anti-racist and you know, really make a game plan and do something about it. And thank you again so much for listening to Faith Finds Out. This is Faith Signs Out.